This week, Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto announced a new anti-corruption initiative to be led by the country's controller. It will investigate the federal government, including the president. The announcement is perhaps in response to the rising public criticism of the government following the disappearance of those 43 Mexican students more than 4 months ago on the night of September 26th. Officials say those students traveled to the city of Iguala to hold a protest at an event led by the mayor's wife. That's when they were stopped by local police and 43 went missing. Now they've been declared dead. John Gibler is a freelance journalist living in Mexico, and he's been piecing together what happened that mysterious night and lays it all out in a story in California Sunday Magazine. He's with us from Mexico City. John, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeremy.
Well, and I want to get to some of your detailed description of what exactly happened on that tragic day. And what we have here is a number of students traveling on five buses in Iguala. And you spoke with one of the students who survived. And I want to play some tape from your conversation. This is Jose Armando. And here he described the first attack.
Cuando de repente ya, cuando íbamos saliendo a la terminal ya.
We were leaving the station and driving in caravan when the police arrived, shooting at us. We had no idea what was happening or why. In that instant, they came at us aggressively, shooting at us with firearms, and we didn't have anything. We were students. We got off the buses and wanted to defend ourselves with rocks to force the police out of the way and keep going.
And he's talking there about local police. They arrived and immediately start shooting?
Correct. He's talking about the municipal police of Iguala. And the events that night were indeed very complex. I think first should recall that the students left their college about an hour and a half away from the city of Iguala in Ayotzinapa in two buses. And initially, they were about 20 miles outside of Iguala trying to fundraise and commandeer more buses out on the highway. They grabbed one bus. The driver requested permission to continue his journey onto the city of Iguala to let off his passengers. About nine students boarded that bus, accompanied it to Iguala. But then the driver wouldn't get back on the bus. The students felt like they were being trapped there. They called for backup, and all the other students went to the bus station in Iguala. That's when they, already traveling in two buses, commandeered three more and left in five. And only a few blocks away from the bus station, police approached them, shooting.
And when you say commandeered, what do you mean? What did they do to those buses? Did they steal the buses?
Here's the thing. It's a situation that doesn't exist in the United States. I don't think it has an easy translation. I think the closest thing that's faithful and truthful to the events is commandeer. They don't steal them because they don't they give them back. And they never take them away from the driver. So that's why I shy away from calling it theft, because it's not quite theft. But it is forceful. It's although they don't use the threats of violence, they just board the bus and say, we're taking it over. And the drivers either agree or they don't.
Well, let's get back to the use of force by police that was going on that day. And you described journalists there on the scene trying to figure out what happened. And then the police came back. Here is some tape from that.
Those were three men dressed in black with face masks who arrived in a vehicle, got off the vehicle. This was around 11:30 that night. The police had already left. They had left with somewhere between 20 and 25 students removed from the third of the three buses that were trapped there on that precise street corner. And the students had tried to protect the evidence of what they considered a crime scene, bullet casings on the street, blood stains on the street, and to protect the crime scene, to wait there for someone to arrive to help them. Well, no authorities arrived, no federal police or state police or members of the armed forces. Instead, journalists arrived. The journalists began to interview several of the witnesses and survivors. And during the interview, what we hear there in that audio clip is, in fact, one of the journalists who was present, his audio recorder, when he asks one of the interviewees his name, we hear the gunfire ring out.
Mm. And it's already a country, by the way, that can be very dangerous for journalists, correct?
One of the most unjust countries in the world. In the past only 8 or so years, I think more than 90 journalists have been assassinated.
So the next morning, parents of these students start to hear about what happened. You spoke with some of them. Here's one who calls himself Mario.
Ya estamos agotados, somos padres de familia, ya estamos agotados, ya no sabemos qué hacer ni con quién dirigirnos.
We're exhausted, we're parents, we're worn out. We don't know what to do, whom to turn to. I don't know how we could be so stupid to come to a private meeting with the governor.
Pedir una audiencia con el gobernador. Y no sé, supuestamente
supposedly Peña Nieto wanted to change the country. Why isn't he here now? Why hasn't he come? We're talking about 43 people, not two. And they're not criminals. No, they were students. And unfortunately, as I told the governor, if it had been his son, they would have found him in half an hour and without a scratch. Our only crime is being poor and to look for schools where we can send our kids. That's how it is.
John, a lot of anger there, as I'm sure you're hearing from many of the parents. And you're hearing a lot of this from others as well who aren't related to the victims of this anger at the government and how they handled it.
Absolutely. And in fact, that audio can serve as an introduction as to where this anger stems from. That was recorded on October 4th in the city of Chilpancingo, the state capital of Guerrero, on the just outside the door of the governor's offices. And that day is particularly important because October 4th was the day that the state government announced the discovery of several mass graves on the outskirts of Iguala, and they leaked to the press information that the bodies, the half-incinerated remains found in those mass graves, belonged to the students. Now, this wounded and caused an amazing amount of anger in the family members because they had found out about this on Facebook, in the media, rather than any kind of a direct communication from members of the government. And it would turn out that the bodies found in those mass graves, 28 bodies, none of them pertained to the students. And so a week, 2 weeks would go by during which the government said that they had confessed killers, telling the story of how they marched the students out into that hillside, killed them and burned them. And all of this, you know, while the parents are completely submerged in grief and demanding that the government look for their children, look for them not in the ground, but look for them alive because police had taken them away, not some kind of, you know, as one would suspect, organized crime group. These were uniformed police officers.
And that anger has continued right up until now. And we heard just at the end of January, parents in a press conference, very angry at the government. Here is one of the fathers, Don Epifanio.
The government has stepped all over our dignity. They have destroyed us. First, they tell us that our sons are in the mass graves. Then later, they say in the trash dump in Cocula.
John, what's next now for these parents as they continue to be angry at the government and also not believe, many of them, what the government is telling them, that their children are dead?
Indeed, the parents have stated quite clearly that they're going to continue looking for their children. They're also continuing to demand that the government conduct a rigorous, serious, and exhaustive investigation. They do not accept the result of the Federal Attorney General's investigation. In fact, that night at the press conference on the 27th, they put out a list of 10 contradictions and omissions in the federal investigation they demand be addressed. This year, 2015 in Mexico, is a midterm federal election year, and also the state of Guerrero's state elections fall on that same date in early June. And the parents have said that there are no conditions in the state to conduct a free political elections. And so they're calling on people to boycott those elections and to pressure the government to conduct a rigorous and serious investigation to look for their children as well.
Meanwhile, could something like this happen again right now in Mexico? Has enough been done to ensure that you couldn't have another situation just like this?
You know, it's heartbreaking, Jeremy. Since this news kind of exploded and grabbed national and international attention, events have taken place in Mexico that have only caused a blip in the media radar, but that are heartbreaking. There was a Twitter activist, a young woman who's a medical doctor and used an anonymous Twitter account. She was murdered. A photograph was taken of her murdered body, and it was tweeted from her account. Also, in just these past months, an activist in Culiacán, Sinaloa, was on the air in his radio station, on his radio program. His family was in the studio with him. Armed assassins walked in, shot him dead on the air, and walked out. This kind of impunity has been going on for years, and especially since the beginning of the so-called war on drugs initiated by former President Felipe Calderón. And it has also continued really unabated even since the news from the attacks in Iguala scandalized and enraged the nation.
Well, that's why it's all the more important for reporting like the reporting that you are doing from Mexico. Not an easy thing to do, certainly at times a dangerous thing to do, reporting there in Mexico. John Gibler, a freelance journalist. You can read his story on this from the California Sunday Magazine at our website, hereandnow.org. John, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.